Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathleen O, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, July 21st, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 73, the first paragraph that begins with "more than most people." We're reading and commenting on this one paragraph only. Today's readers are Jody E., who will be reading the 12 steps, Shelley E. will be reading the 12 traditions, and the readers of our texts are Robin P., Pam M., and Naomi B. The share ID for Tuesday, July 20th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 17,388. That's 17388. And for this morning's Wednesday, July 21st, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the share ID is 17,396. That's 17396. Our newcomer greeter for today is Kaylee R., and Leslie M. will be making the announcements. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Jody E. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning, Kathleen, and good morning, everybody. This is Jody E., gratefully recovering compulsive overeater, anorexic, and bulimic in California. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for the opportunity, and I pass.
And thank you, Jody E. Shelley E., would you read the 12 traditions, please?
I sure will. Good morning. This is Shelley E., a gratefully recovered compulsive overeater, presently in Petoskey, Michigan. The 12 traditions. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Number two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Number three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Number four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Number five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Number six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Number seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Number eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Number nine, OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Number 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Number 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And number 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me to do service. I pass.
And thank you, Shelley E. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We are on page 73, the first paragraph that begins with more than most people, and we're reading and commenting on this one paragraph only. So good morning, Robin P., if you would get us started, please.
Yes, thanks so much, Kathleen. Hi, this is Robin P. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Costa Rica. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. Well, it's perfect because I starred on Broadway for a long time and when I was younger, and I definitely was living a double life until I got abstinent and was working this program. And I felt so many times that I was fooling everybody. I was bulimic at times. I was anorexic at times. And I thought everyone just believes me. I have a really fast metabolism, is what I would tell people. And I was a compulsive overeater at times. And I was the only one who didn't. I was in denial. You know, don't even know that I'm lying. And I just lived such a double life, thinking that I looked perfect on the outside, and I felt so broken on the inside. I grew up in a lot of child abuse, and it didn't matter what I felt like. It just mattered what I looked like. And today, it my goal is the opposite. It doesn't matter what I look like. It matters what I feel like. And I've been abstinent for 5 years by God's grace, and I'm a vegan, and I eat for my nourishment and for my health, and also I feel very conscious about my eating. I feel morally doing what I feel is right for me with my food. And I don't eat poison, which is such a funny sentence, but I don't eat GMOs, and I don't eat gluten, which feels like a ton of glue. It doesn't feel good to my body at all. So I eat consciously today, and I eat the way that feels right, and I feel so much more whole. And I feel so connected to God and nature, and I get to go swimming in the ocean every day and hiking in the mountains, and I see heart rocks everywhere, and heart plants, these leaves in the shape of hearts, and I feel like God just keeps saying, go love, be about love, and that it's in nature everywhere. And so it's really about becoming integrated in the opposite of this with the stage character, actually feeling like I do deserve it today. I'm God's child, and I deserve to be healthy, happy, and well, and so well taken care of here in Costa Rica, and living the life of my dreams. And that's a miracle and grace of this program and recovery. And today, I am a normal weight, thank God. I am fit, and my fitness is important to me, and my health is important to me, and my outside does equal my inside. God bless everybody with a very blessed abstinence day. I'm so grateful I got to share.
Thank you, Robin P. in Costa Rica, for getting us started this morning. Okay, we are on page 73, the first paragraph, more than most people, reading and commenting on this one paragraph. So we do value your experience, but we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you haven't shared Monday or Tuesday, I'm ready for your name.
Naomi B.
Okay, I got Naomi B. And who met with
Nadia
Mary?
B.
Brandy M. Okay, I got Naomi B. Was it Mary?
Brandy.
Okay, Brandy M.
Nadia
and Nadia B.
Deb E.
Veronica B.
Okay, excellent, guys. All right, so I have Naomi B, Nadia B, Brandy M, Deb E, and Veronica B. And if you could say the state you're calling from, that would be great.
Sure.
So go ahead, please, Naomi B.
Thank you, Kathleen. Thank you for your service, my friend. Good morning, family. This is Naomi B., a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater outside Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And, oh, my gosh, when I heard this paragraph, it's like, boing, just kind of smacked me right in the face because, oh, was I the actor. But, you see, I had to be because I had a daycare business here for my home. I took care of children. But I have to say, when I was taking care of the children, I was very loving and kind because that's my heart. But, I mean, the children would leave and I'd be pleasant to the parents and, you know, all that would be good. And then I would turn and be like a raging maniac to my family. I didn't know what I didn't know. I mean, it's like this disease had me by the throat. And it was like unless I could seek out the ease and comfort from this huge binge foods that I indulged in. I mean, you know, my brain was just crazy. And it's so different today. It is so different. I mean, I don't have to go any further than just dealing with my husband. My husband in himself, I think he's got a little bit of OCD, but yeah, you know, after 43 years, he's going to complain. But he's not going to change. He doesn't have a program. I do. And when he comes up with some of these crazy things he says or does, I shocked myself at my silence. You know, because in the 12, the AA 12 and 12, I believe it's step 10, restraint of tongue and pen. Yeah, that's what I do. And loving him and realizing that he too is a sick man. Oh, the sick man's prayer. I love that sick man's prayer. But that's not the way it was before. And I'm thankful that God put my eyes in the front of my face so I can look forward and I can be the person he wants me to be. And this program is just, if I say it saved my life, it's so pale because it has, and God willing, this Sunday, I'm going to have 10 years of abstinence. Hello, 10 years of not eating a bag of Doritos or a hoagie. Hello, this is like, how does this happen? Well, it happens because God is leading. God is my director. I stepped down a long time ago. So thank you for allowing me to share, and I pass.
Thank you, Naomi B. in Pennsylvania. Nadia B., good morning. You're up, followed by Brandy M.
Good morning, everyone. This is Nadia B., gratefully recovered in Connecticut. As this paragraph was read, I was thinking about the principle of step five and its integrity. When I looked up integrity, it's a state of being whole and undivided. And, you know, I was constantly divided between, you know, pleasing every, you know, what I wanted to look like to outside world and what I truly believed was right thing to do. And most of the time I pleased myself and my ego. And I did what, you know, was required of me, you know, by my ego, doing what was, what would, you know, beautify my stage character. You know, what would make me look good to the outer world? And I would go to work and I would be here in the fellowship and I would be very kind and nice and pretty. And then I would go home. I would close the door and open the fridge, and I didn't know. You know, I didn't even remember what happened afterwards. I just binged, I purged, I used laxatives, and then I sat quietly on the couch until my husband would come home, and I would just eat dinner with him and, you know, never discussed anything with anybody. I lived this double life, you know, and I wanted to look good to the outer world, but I couldn't keep up with the game anymore because food had become my master. And that was who I was truly, a compulsive overeater. And this compulsion overtook everything in my life, my marriage, all my dreams. And I just didn't want to live like that anymore. And so, you know, I needed this program more than I needed anything. And I'm, you know, so grateful that I have this, you know, principles, new principles in my life to live my life by these principles. I didn't know how to. I didn't, you know, I did what I always done. And, you know, it stopped working. And so thank goodness for this step. For 12 steps, thank goodness for, you know, step five, which taught me integrity, which taught me that I could be perfectly whole and still be, you know, a good human being. And I don't have to constantly please my ego. I can just be who God created me to be. And thank God, you know, for you guys who reparented me here, who taught me that that type of life is possible. Freedom is not free. And I'm so grateful to be living, you know, the life of the spiritual principles of 12 steps today. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Naughty B in Connecticut. Brandy M., good morning. You are up, followed by Debbie.
Good morning. It's Brandy. I'm a recovered compulsive reader in Alberta, Canada. Yeah. So I heard something and, you know, they said, and I really, really resonated for me when I was in my disease, you know, if I didn't feel wrong, I didn't feel right. And so, you know, I had to be feeling guilt. I had to be feeling shame. There had to be dramatics in my life. Like, you know, unless I was feeling like wrong, you know, just so attention seeking, validation seeking, whatever. I needed that in my addiction. I had to have that, or else I didn't feel settled and I didn't feel right. And, you know, here it talks about like how we lived a double life. And, you know, my family saw that Dr. Jekyll and Hyde all the time, you know, and they would say, you act so different out there, you know, and they were right, you know, like whoever I was in front of, I was performing, you know, acting like life was grand. And, you know, meanwhile, just looking so sad in my face and so overweight and, you know, people can see, they see it. I'm not fooling anyone. But, you know, I would show up in these ways and just be, you know, borderline abusive to people in my house, you know, verbally. And then, you know, I would show up with a smile on my face right after I just answered a text telling my husband to go, you know, whatever. And that was the way I lived my life. And today, you know, it looks very different, although I'm still human and I will never rise above the level of human. And so I still have times like yesterday when my husband texted me something and you know what, the discomfort started inside and I'm like, who is he to talk to me like that? I don't do that. Like, I haven't done that in a long time. And, you know, but at the end of the day, and so I reacted in that. But I had to go back and I had to review that behavior and, you know, look at, well, what is it that's triggering me? Why is my reaction so strong, God? Like, what's happening here? And, you know, it's like God would have me be in these situations just to show up differently, right? My family knows that if I've messed up today, that they're likely going to either see a living amends from me or they're going to hear, you know what, like, that was wrong, what I did and what I said. And that's the beauty of this program is that I don't have to live a double life anymore. I can just show up who I am and what I am and be okay with that because I don't have to win any prizes for God to love me. And so I don't need to win any prizes for you to love me either. I don't give a shit. So as long as I'm surrounded by God's love, that's all that matters. So with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Brandy M. in Canada. And Debbie, you are up, followed by Veronica B. Good morning, Deb.
Hi, good morning. This is Deb E., recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. I really like this paragraph. That double life was exhausting. You know, I led the double life with the heat. Like, I was known as the health nut. I ate what I thought was perfectly in front of everyone, which was barely anything at all. And then I went home and I binged in the dark when it was this big secret that nobody knew about. And, you know, with my behavior and the way I acted, it was the same way. You know, I tried so hard to be a good girl, to look like perfect. It was all about perfection, really. Like, I was just trying to achieve perfection in every aspect of my life. And it didn't work. And it was exhausting. And it wasn't really me. There was no truth in it. There was no honesty in it. And this last sentence, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. You know, I have this core lie, this old belief that nobody will like me if they really get to know me, if they really see my personality, they just won't like me. So I would decide for people what they should see. And well, I didn't realize it at the time, but I understand it now how important self-image was to me. And that I had to, like, put on this appearance of being a certain way and making people think I was a certain way. But really, all that is just being completely in self-will. It's me that I know better than God, and I know better than anyone else. And that I'm determining that if I ask a certain woman to be with me, and that's all they get to see of me, as opposed to just being myself, having the courage and vulnerability to just be who I truly am, and then letting people decide for themselves. You know, it's control, it's self-will, you know, with all those character defects. And for a while, you know, in my worst year, my disease, I lived, I moved away from my hometown, and I was very well aware of, I'd say, like, there was, like, the hometown Deb and the new city Deb, and I just could not reconcile the two. And what program has given me is that it's taken many, many years, and I still have moments where it's challenging for me, but it's mostly what you see is what you get. And I've strived for that for so long. I was always so, I admire people and I'm so inspired by people who just were not afraid to just be themselves, to just say what they meant and be who they are. And I try for that now, and I'm human, so I fall short of it, and it's hard to get past this, you know, these deeply ingrained habits and, like, character defects, but it does work one day at a time, I guess.
Thank you, Deb E. in Israel. And before I take you, Veronica, just a reminder to everyone, we're on page 73, the first paragraph, more than most people, and I'll be able to take some more names after Veronica. So good morning, Veronica. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. My name is Veronica. I'm a compulsive eater and a bulimic, and thank you, Kathleen, for your service. This is me. I'm the alcoholic that leads a double life. From a very young age, I remember using food to cope my feelings. I was a very quiet child. I never spoke up. I was afraid to speak up for myself. I was afraid to tell my family, my parents specifically, how I was feeling. I was afraid to tell others when they hurt my feelings, specifically my brothers. My brothers used to call me at the dinner table. They would say, give it to the garbage disposal whenever anybody had leftovers. They would humiliate me and call me names. And this is how I grew up. So when I turned to food. I turned to food. I was an overweight child. And then I discovered bulimia when I was 15 years old. And that's when I started to purge. And I ate and threw up for 15 years. My ex-husband didn't even know that I was bulimic because I was good at hiding it. He had no clue. Nobody knew until I was willing to tell the doctor that I was eating and throwing up and killing myself. And I had a friend in OA who had changed her life, and I wanted what she had, and I came to Overeaters Anonymous, and that's when I started my journey here. And my whole life has changed completely. Today I live on a basis of trusting and relying on God today, and I didn't know what that meant when I was in the food. And every day that I work these steps and I live by the spiritual principles that I've been taught here, I'm leaving the old life behind, you know, and I just keep moving towards God. And God is and has rearranged my heart. And I have a sister who I have. It's very difficult for me to be loving to her because she's very irrational. And today she's having surgery. And the first thing I thought of when I woke up was her. And I said a prayer for my sister. And I can't tell you, a couple of years ago, I was wishing she wasn't even here on this earth. And that is not loving. And that is, there is no God in any of that kind of thinking. And God has just rearranged my heart. That's all I can say. I don't know how it works, but I know that it works. This work, the steps, the program, it works. And thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Veronica B. in California. Okay, we're on page 73, the first paragraph, more than most people. And if you have not shared on Monday or Tuesday and you'd like to share today, I'm ready for your name.
Elena C.
Donna
B.
Donna B.
Elena
B. Elaine C.
Okay, I heard somebody B and Elaine C. Who is the B? Not Donna B, but there's another B.
Lynn D, as in David.
Oh, Lynn D.
Elena C.
I got you, Elena C.
Okay.
I have Elena C, Donna B, Lynn D, Elaine C. Did I miss anybody? Anyone else want to jump in on this one? Okay. Well, you muster up your
Kim
courage.
T.
We'll start with these. Who is that? Kim T. T as in Tom, Kim?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, I have Elena C., Donna B., Lynn D., Elaine C., and Kim T. So go ahead, please, Elena.
Good morning. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Thank you. My name is Elena C. from Greenville, South Carolina, gratefully recovered compulsive overeater. And this paragraph reminds me of my low self-worth that I had before my exposure to the 12 steps. I had no idea who I was. I had no idea what I liked. If I liked green because other people like green. I liked the kind of music because other people like the kind of music. And, you know, nobody knew that. Nobody had any idea, not even myself, about that. And yet I projected on the outside. I hid under my good grades, my cleverness. That was my identity. That was my education, was my identity. And all the other would, like my makeup or who I am, it was just unknown to me. And, it was also that because I was impacted by the addiction of others who were raising me, not being validated for my feelings. Not people who were raising me. I don't think they knew who I was either. But as I was exposed to the 12 steps, I became to kind of peel up the layers of defensiveness, of protection that I was. And it doesn't matter now. I was so prideful about my education. It doesn't really matter, you know, like the part of me who was considered herself superior to others because I had a master's degree. It doesn't matter anymore. I'm more equal to other people. I got in touch with me, with myself, my beautiful in specialness and uniqueness. Because that's all coming from my higher power. When I'm close to my higher power, that's who I am. You know, I have God within, and I'm a beautiful, wonderful child of God. And thank you, God, I was exposed to these steps of recovery and heard you guys on the line. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Elena C. in South Carolina. And Donna B., go ahead. You're up, followed by Lynn D. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning. This is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, calling from Denver. And the truth is that despite being in recovery, I still lead a double life. When I'm home with my husband and my children, I'm actually really quiet. I feel at peace. I feel safe. I feel comfortable. And I don't feel the need to constantly talk. And in my work and in my social life and in my interactions with people in the outside world, it's a compulsion. And my mouth just keeps on moving. It's like if I just keep on talking and keep on talking and keep on talking, that maybe I'll say something that will resonate with the other person and will make them like me. And when my husband and I used to socialize more, before we had kids, before there was COVID and we'd go to parties, I can't tell you how many times my husband would kick me under the table and say, like, why did you say that? And I don't know. I don't know. I really don't know. Like, this desire to be liked, the desire to fit in, the desire to feel a connection with others is an element of my addiction. Just as people talk about isolation being a part of this addiction, for me, this imaginary, deep, intimate connection with every human being and being loved and adored is a part of my disease as well. And as I get closer to my higher power, and as I slowly, slowly trust the possibility that I'm okay the way that I am less compelled. I'm less driven by something inside of me that I cannot control to just keep on talking until I don't know. I just can't shut my mouth. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Donna B. in Colorado. And Lynn D., good morning. You are up, followed by Elaine C.
Thank you. Thank you for everybody's service on the line. I'm Lynn D. from San Diego. I do love this paragraph too, but I have, it's preceded by this encouragement of us compulsive overeaters to like, basically do our fifth step, right? And so I have this thing above it. So we write down anything that wasn't in our inventory that we thought we'd take to our grave. That was right before this paragraph. That's what I have written in the side notes of my big book. And so I think that, it's trying to make sure that in our fifth step, you know, we've done this inventory and we're now ready to tell somebody. And, you know, and these people that have written this book are trying to be like, don't be scared, you know, like everybody leads a double life or, you know, whatever wrongs you have made in your life, like, you know, kind of okay. Everybody will have something. And so I kind of took it to mean that, you know, I was, thank goodness, self-reliance only served me for my first kind of, you know, 18, 19 years of my life until I found program. And it was exhausting, right? Like, just like finally realizing that I had a higher power and it didn't involve me in any way was very eye-opening and shocking. But then it was like relief, you know? And so, and then I do like this line, this is the one he likes his fellows to see. So I didn't really have a great, like, I didn't have any great, you know, mentors or anything. So I just kind of did what peers did, right? So if they, you know, shopped at a certain store or got their first job at a certain place, like that's what everybody else did, right? Like there's kind of this, you kind of do what your 10 closest people do, you know, growing up. And so, you know, if you went to college, you know, in this area, then I went to college, right? Like it was just kind of monkey see, monkey do. And I remember working through this, like somebody asking like a personal question directed just at me, like almost like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Or how do you feel like living your life? And like, I would mumble over words and like, I don't know, you know, like, well, what is she doing? Or what is she doing? Right. Like I was kind of like a copycat. And, so it's just such a relief that like I can pick, you know, one of my, there used to be that saying, you know, kind of just another bozo on the bus, you know, and I never really liked that. But I kind of changed it over the years to, oh, there we go, being human again, because it gets us out of self-reliance and higher power status just to kind of bring us down and realize that we all kind of make mistakes. So, So it's kind of encouraging us to kind of say everything at our fifth step and to get it all out. And thank you so much for letting me share.
And thank you, Lindy in California. Elaine C., you're up, followed by Kim T. Go ahead, Elaine.
Good morning. My name is Elaine C. from Michigan. thank you, Kathleen, and everyone that is involved in the Vision Program. I rarely share, but this paragraph really hit home to me. I grew up in a parochial school. I only had 99 students in my graduating class, and I was not used to being around a lot of people. And I did go to college, small college, and I remember walking through the halls and went by a psychology teacher and thought he could tell how messed up I was just by looking at me. Also, my first year of teaching, one of my teacher friends was married to a psychologist, and I was uncomfortable around him because I thought he could see right through me. And luckily, being an elementary teacher, I felt safe around young children, but it was the adults I was uncomfortable around, the parents and the staff. And that led me to perfectionism because I wanted to be the best at what I could be doing. But I've learned in and out of OA. I'm 72, and I've been in and out of OA since I was 29. Thanks to Vision. I started Vision a year ago, May, and I've been abstinent, have a sponsor. I've gone through the 12 steps, and the isolation that I felt has broken away, and I feel free. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Elaine C. in Michigan. And Kim T., you're up, and I will have time for one more share after Kim. Again, we're on page 70, the third paragraph. We're on page 73, the first paragraph, more than most people. Okay, go ahead, please, Kim T.
Hi, it's Kim T., recovered compulsive reader in Colorado. And thank you for leading the meeting. Thank you, everyone, for your shares. Every time I think of a double life or a triple life or a quadruple life, in my case, much of the time I think of an old Woody Allen movie called Zelig, and when he was with a Scotsman, he was Scottish. When he was with a fat person, he was fat. He just became whoever he was with. And that, when I saw that movie, that and Days of Wine and Roses were the two movies that just told me who I was at the time. And I would just become whoever you are, because I don't know who Kim is. And it's too frightening to find out who Kim is. And I'm recovered today. I cannot say that I really know who Kim is today, but I know I have a chance because I'm abstaining. I've got the food down, thank you, God, and I am willing to work. I'm willing to take direction, and I'm willing to help others and just do the stuff that needs to be done. And some days it's scary, and today I was out for a walk and listening, and I thought, I don't want to do this, but I have no other choice, which is what brought me back to the program almost 2 years ago now, that I have no other choice. It's this or it's death. And so I'm just really, really, I'm really grateful. I'm not feeling grateful, but I know that there's a gratitude deep in my heart for the 12 steps and for this program, for everyone who is willing to give service. And I just wanted to say that. And plus, I hadn't shared in a while on this line. And it's interesting, the longer I've been recovered, the less I want to share because the less I think I know, which in some ways is good, but it just feels good to break the ice. And so if anyone else needs to break the ice, just do it. So thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you, Kim T. in Colorado. And we have time for another share. Would anyone else like to share on page 73, the first paragraph? Now is your chance.
Alexis from New Jersey.
Okay, Alexis, go ahead, please.
I was very impulsive about, and that's the story of my life, being very impulsive, not pausing and thinking at all, or, you know, like asking God to help me in the moment. I'm okay at doing prayer throughout the day, and I'm okay at meditating every once in a while, even though my breath is getting more shallow as I get older. But I was impulsive about eating and drinking and smoking and talking and myself. I was very impulsive about myself. It was like, what do you think of me? You know, like, what can I do today? Never putting myself in the other person's shoes or being considerate, you know, like it just self-centered in the extreme, as the big book says. And that resulted in feeling guilty and shame and feelings of being wrong all the time, because I was always wrong when I was in that world of self-centeredness. So how could I, you know, like ever expect to have good feelings about myself when the world revolved around me? And it's beginning to change now, I guess, the more I talk about it. And I have the awareness anyway, and I lived in the past for so long I couldn't even enjoy anything because I had no future. I had no plans for the future. There's a movie, The Candidate, with Robert Redford, and he wins the election, and someone comes up to the room, his manager, and says, he says to him, now what? He had no plans for what he was going to do after he was elected. And that's me. It's like, you know, you're going to live a few more years. Well, what do I do with those few more years that I live with? So please pray for me. I would like to be the people like you, and would discover it's very attractive to me, the people that you are, the people who can sit still and not be restless, irritable, and discontent, the people who can speak through what they see in God's voice, and the people who can work this program. I've done it to the best of my ability so far. Thank you. I hope I can continue. Yes, thank you.
Alexis, thank you. What's your first, the initial of your last name, Alexis?
F.
F as in Frank?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thanks, Alexis F. in New Jersey. Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone who shared today. We are now going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So, Pam M., would you please read a vision for you?
Blessed morning, everyone. This is Pam M. in upstate New York. Page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God. Yes, that's a donkey. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.